Welcome to the Keegan Smith Podcast. Choose what you give your life to or have it stolen from you. My mission is to rewire for power. We've all been gifted massive potential. This podcast is about unwrapping that gift. What if you could? Potentiating wellness, abundance, and movement. Today's podcast is proudly brought to you by Real Movement Level 1. Real Movement was started 2014 to help coaches get better. Since that time, it's helped over 70 of its members open new training facilities and dozens of its members get started working in professional teams. Some of those coaches are now running programs in professional teams around the world. The program is designed not just around increasing your knowledge. You can go and sit on YouTube all day and hear information about just about anything out there. What this program is about you experiencing and taking on your best self. Get 3 days face-to-face and 3 months of online development. Get into it. Keegan Smith here for the Keegan Smith Experience. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about beliefs, the power of beliefs. What do you believe? Now, this is right at the core of what it's going to take to get the most out of life, to have the best influence on the people around you, and really doing anything exceptional. This is the foundation, and it's also probably one of the most challenging things to make a shift in. Okay, so beliefs, what are we talking about? It's those deep subconscious and sometimes conscious thoughts that govern our expectations for the future. Okay, so most of our beliefs are based on past experiences, but even not even our own past experiences, but the experiences that are expressed to us through media, teachers, and also, you know, parents. That's where a lot of our beliefs come from. So it's very important, if we don't want to do exactly what's been done in the past, if we want to actually create our own future and not just live on autopilot, that we analyze our beliefs. And that's really what Real Movement is based around. That's why I created Real Movement, is because I want to have a practical method to show people that when they change, their beliefs have to change. You know, so forcing through physical experience people to have a different perception of themselves, you know, gives them a platform and an opportunity to build a different perception of themselves in every aspect of life. And, you know, this philosophy goes back to the ancient Greeks. You know, I'm listening to one of the great speakers in ancient Greece who was made an orphan early in life, and he was due to have a good education. His parents had put aside money. His inheritance was meant to be spent on his education, but it was stolen from him by his guardians. And so he was denied an education. He had a bad stutter and he was physically disabled. And instead of just accepting that as his fate, he locked himself away and developed himself physically, but also practiced his speaking and his arguments so that he could win a court case against his guardians who'd stolen so much from him. So, you know, going way, way back, you know, this thing of tying physical development to emotional development, you know, going through suffering and accepting suffering and physical challenge and mental challenge, and that things aren't going to be always rosy, you know, that is really a foundation for a good life. That story is in The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. I can't remember the guy's name. The ancient Greek guy's name is a funny one, but this philosophy goes back a long way. So, what do you believe you can't do physically, and what can we do about that? You know, like the thing that I love about what I do is I get to see people challenge their limiting beliefs. You know, people who are doing the Level 1 program at the moment, there's Leo girl in there. She's, you know, posted on her Instagram, you know, this story, so it's no problem in telling you guys. She's got an issue with her eyesight, which means that she can't drive for more than 20, 30 minutes. She's had a problem with depth perception. She couldn't really catch a basketball. She couldn't catch and throw the juggling ball in one hand. And she thought that she was going to be unable to move ahead with that component of the Real Movement Level 1, where, you know, you develop your juggling. And this is the best case scenario. Like, this is the most transformative thing. Like, she has the gift of that limiting, you know, the belief that she couldn't do it, and she'd been told by doctors, and often this is the story, you know, not to make doctors the root of all evil, because they're not, but they have powerful words, you know, we're indoctrinated into believing that they hold truth, and often they don't, okay, and this is another case where they don't. So she was told that, you know, she had issues with her depth perception, and she wasn't going to be able to change that, and, you know, now she's 8 weeks into the program, she can juggle three balls for a few minutes, you know, so she can obviously progress, and she will continue to progress if she continues to practice. So those smashing those beliefs is really at the core of what I believe is a life well lived. So how are we meant to be living? Well, yeah, I believe that we're meant to be taking on these limitations. So for me, there's been a bunch. You know, people look from the outside and go, oh yeah, it's okay for you. But I had the same thing with juggling. I tried to learn how to juggle as a 8 or 10 year old, and I wasn't able to. I tried with socks, I tried with scarves. I just couldn't get it going. I had an instruction booklet and it just didn't work for me. And I thought maybe there's something wrong with me. And so I tried again when I was about 18, and there was some guys there, Darren Booth and Pete Kelly, who were, you know, top level sort of state hockey players. And I looked up to them, and, you know, I wanted to be a top level state hockey player. I was starting to actually play at state level, but still sort of felt like I was, I guess, what they call like a manufactured player, you know, like I was only there because I was working hard and because my fitness was good, but maybe I just didn't have the talent and just the raw capacity that those guys had. And so, you know, I could see that they could juggle. It came up a couple of times at hockey training. They just started juggling the hockey balls. And I was like, I tried again. I tried to do it. And I was like, why can't I do this? You know, maybe this is why I'm not going to make it. You know, maybe this is, so there's something, you know, in me that's limiting me, that's not going to help me, you know, not going to let me get as far as I want to go. And so, you know, it wasn't again till I was traveling in Latin America, and that in itself, you know, traveling on my own, backpacking without a companion. So the first trip was like 9 months. And I'd done, you know, a few weeks in Europe before that. That was in itself like a big thing of like smashing through limiting beliefs and just taking on the world and just being, you know, vulnerable to whatever was going to happen. So living in Guatemala during that first trip in Latin America, I was maybe 6 weeks into the trip, and I was volunteering in a bar. It was part of the process that you had to go through to be able to work in the school, like the orphanage that I wanted to volunteer in, that I stayed at for a couple of months. During that time, I didn't really enjoy the bar work that much. Just watching people get drunk and listening to the same songs over and over again isn't actually that exciting. So I would hide out the back and juggle limes. You know, this is something that I came up with after a week or so of not really enjoying the bar that much. And I was learning through trial and error, and it was tough. And I was like, I don't know if I'm ever going to get this, but I'm just going to keep trying. And because I'd had that experience of learning Spanish, and I had to keep trying with Spanish. Like, it was frustrating, and sometimes you feel as though you're not getting anywhere. But, you know, overall, I could see that my Spanish was improving. So maybe, just maybe, I could have that same improvement in my juggling. So I kept at it, and after a few days, I could actually juggle. I learned through trial and error, and I learned a lot more slowly than what most of the people who I'm working with. And it wasn't till probably, how many years was it? It was probably about six, seven years later that I started to four ball juggle. Okay, so right now we have people come in the program, and within a month, you know, they're starting their four ball juggling drills. And, you know, I expect some of the guys to four ball juggle okay within their first 3 months in the program. Now, it does make a big difference if you have a method, if you have discipline, if you're in an environment where that's normal. But for me, yeah, it was a slow process, and it was a process that was built around, you know, I didn't know that four ball juggling was really an option with three. I was really happy to be three ball juggling, and most people are like that initially, until you sort of know, well, yeah, that's something that's reachable, that's something that's doable as well. So what it really takes then, and as you're going through these things, it's like, well, really, it's just a question of what I decide to do then, isn't it? Because these things that, well, you know, seem so impossible, they actually become pretty simple. Back somersault was another one, something that, you know, scares the, you know, it scares people. Anyone who can't do it is intimidated by a back somersault, basically, because the prospect of just jumping up in the air and spinning over backwards, where at one point, you know, your head is facing towards the ground, like no one wants to jump and land on their head. And that's a fear based in a lot of logic. Like, no one wants that to happen. I didn't think I had the power to do it. I didn't think I had the skill coordination to do it. You know, it was one of those things that I didn't think I would ever probably get to the level of athleticism and skill and courage required to do it. But, you know, it was something that I sort of wanted to overcome and had to overcome. And, you know, I got a teacher. I worked with Dan Aban. Actually, I'd started to do them off the diving board in Guatemala on that pretty much that same trip, I think, is where it started. But some years later, I started working with Dan Aban from Daring Humans. We've done a bunch of events together for Real Movement. And yeah, he showed me some progressions, and you know, there was it wasn't without failures and tumbles and whatever. But I, you know, I did a back somersault within a few days of being taught, and you know, now we have guys at events sometimes within, you know, 15 minutes, half an hour, they're, you know, they're doing their first back somersaults, and they can do multiple somersaults. And you know, again, when there's a method and other people are doing it, it becomes simpler. But for me, without having that environment of that being the norm, it was a huge deal to be able to get that and to get myself off the ground into the back somersault. So what is it for you? Like, what are these things for you? What are the things that you know you'd like to do, but you're not sure if you ever could? You know, where do you hold these beliefs that are holding you back from what you want? A lot of times these can be around body composition as well. Like, I'm big boned. I'm always, you know, my parents were overweight. So I'm going to be, you know, there's a lot of X disease in the family. I'm probably going to get that too. You know, all of those things are really, you know, really damaging. You know, I think that's the root of a lot of the problems of our time is just our expectations for ourselves and what we see coming. Okay, so what we believe to be the future and our beliefs about humanity, right? Like the president of the United States, and you know, a lot of the dominant paradigm is this stuff around fear, and you know, it's a dangerous world. And you know, for me, it's not a dangerous world, because I hitchhiked all through Latin America and I was fine. People went out of their way to look after me. I had a few hairy moments, but you know, like, overall, you know, I was so well looked after. And you know, the concept of being scared of strangers and scared of the unknown, and oh, I don't want to go there. Like, a lot of people from the United States are, you know, they're intimidated to go to Latin America, spend time in Mexico. You know, I lived in villages in the south of Mexico where there's, you know, there's a low intensity war going on there. At the same time, you know, people are generally good and people looked after me, and you know, I learned a lot about what was going on there. I learned a lot about myself, and I tried to contribute in any way that I could. And I think I did in some ways, with some agricultural projects and probably just being interested in their way of life and trying to learn their language and, that sort of stuff, I think is valuable to a sort of downtrodden and repressed, culture. So, you know, the thing here, the belief that the world's a dangerous place and it's dog eat dog and all these kind of things that some people, you know, that's the place that a lot of people live their lives from. My experience is that that's just not true. And it's not a belief that I hold. Like, I have very little fear for the unknown, for the stranger. I think the majority of people, and the vast majority, 99.999% of people, are just doing their best, and they want to see the best for other people around them. Sometimes, you know, they get caught up in, you know, shitty little arguments and negative beliefs about other population groups or whatever. But if you get down to it, if you can actually have a truthful conversation with the person, and that's really what that trip was about, was like, you know, I sat with a drug addict in the park in Colombia for like 3 hours and just talked to him about his life and how he got there and, you know, where he was going. And, you know, that kind of thing was something that scared me. But at the same time, like, there was a huge amount of, you know, freedom and liberation. And, you know, I think, you know, he enjoyed speaking to me as well, and having, you know, someone, you know, from the other side of the world come and want to know his story. I don't think we need to have the fear that we do have. And I think the people that are trying to instill that fear, you know, what's going on the other side of the world. And, you know, you think, well, like there's a war going on there and there's something horrible going on there. You know, I think if you get to sit down with those people and you actually figure out what their goals are and what they stand for, and I don't think you're going to see the evil or the, you know, the hatred and that sort of stuff that is easy to perpetuate from a distance and it's easy to put into movies and into computer games. It's just not really there when you actually get down and look people in the eye. That's my experience, and I've spoken to people on, you know, I was speaking to people on different sides of that war in the south of Mexico. I've had the same experience in Colombia, where there's, you know, there's a civil war that's sort of been going on for a long time. You're speaking to people on the both sides of that. Venezuela, same kind of thing. You know, there was a very divided society around a political, you know, ideology, but fundamentally everyone's working towards the same thing. And, you know, it's mostly stirred up by media and, you know, the us and them thing. It's just, it's mostly a manufactured thing that doesn't really play out once you strip away a few layers and actually just speak and look eye to eye. It's generally not there. So how do we go about getting rid of these beliefs? Well, yeah, I think it is mostly through taking on these experiences. Like if you're scared of something, then take on the experience and all of a sudden it becomes a whole different thing. Generally we tend to assume the worst. Like, why did that, you know, why is this not doing well? Why did that person not like what I did? You know, we tend to think, well, oh, it's because of me, because I'm not good enough, or because, you know, they don't respect me, or things like that. But often it's more about them. It's like they were busy, or they haven't heard about it, or yeah, they actually really did like it. They just didn't tell you, you know. So making up stories of the worst is probably one of the worst things that we do. And yeah, it's a challenging thing to change, because most of this stuff is autopilot. It was what we were programmed with before we were 7 years old. And it's mostly our parents' beliefs and what we saw on TV in school. But through experiences, it definitely can shift. And, you know, there has been a massive shift in my life with making, you know, what I do the center of my life. Doesn't mean that it's always exactly what I want. And I, you know, I still get help. I've been working with, Tony Priddle. I did a bit of work with him recently with Mind Mechanics, and his system is really, you know, quite similar to what you see in the Tim Ferriss podcast with the Dr. Gabor. You know, like where is it actually coming from, and where did it first come up? And, you know, changing the story about what happened in the past gives you a new perspective and a new perception to be able to move forward with in the future. And, you know, it is definitely very challenging, that method. I find it, you know, challenging to continually engage with. But yeah, what we repeat to ourselves and, you know, what we are at the core, you know, makes all the difference. So stuff that changes this, like I really believe in biology of belief, spontaneous evolution, work by Bruce Lipton, very powerful in this. Joe Dispenza's work, his latest book is much more sort of readable and human. Heart Math Institute. So things where you change state in terms of mental energy, change brainwave function, you know, like build on silver mind method. So you have like beta brainwaves where you have like really concentrated thought, and then you have a more relaxed alpha. Below that you have like theta level. And below that you have delta level. So as you slow down brainwaves and as you have the heart electric energy in sync with the brain electric energy, then you kind of open up the possibility for relaxation, for de-stress, you know, de-stressing, but also programming. Heart Math Institute is probably the easiest place to start with a lot of these things. So just heart-focused breathing. There's a couple of devices and, you know, it is easy to get wrapped up in lots of technology these days, and it can become a distraction. But I found that getting started with this stuff when I hadn't really had any luck with meditation and such, the technology really helped to keep me focused and, you know, to get direct feedback on what was going on with my heart energy. The data is really clear. The data is, you know, it's true. It's a technology that's been used by NASA, and, you know, it's there's validity to it. So yeah, if you're looking for a way to get started with kind of setting yourself in a tone to be able to change beliefs, I think HeartMath Institute is probably the best place to start. I think the Joe Dispenza work is also, you know, super powerful. Bob Proctor's work is also, I think, a lot of the best periods of my development and life have been when I've been focusing on his materials and just using the simple principles of repetition and positive energy around repetition. That's how big things have happened in my life. So, you know, making a strong decision and then that becomes a belief. So I decided that I was going to snatch 100 kilos. If I said that I wasn't going to go to the Klokov Poliquin seminar unless I'd snatched 100 kilos before that. I think my best at the time was around 85 or 90. And I sort of saw it as this massive thing that I didn't know if I would ever get to. But putting that pressure on myself and making that clear decision, you know, that shaped my behaviors and habits for the next few months. And, you know, I made the lift. I made it to 100 because I'd made such a big deal out of that 100. And I was more focused on that than the process of, you know, lifting a few times a week and making sure my squat goes up. If I'd have stuck with that process, I'd probably be snatching, you know, 120 plus right now. But because I was so focused on just that single goal, the training fell away once I hit it. I focused on some other stuff and I haven't snatched 100 again since. That's something, again, that I would love to do this year. But having that super clear intention and the belief that it was going to happen and having a negative consequence, a pain associated, you know, it was a couple of $1,000, one of the first big investments that I made in myself. I think it was $2,500 or something like that. So, you know, it was a big deal for me to like walk away from. And I, you know, I'd said it to a bunch of people that I wasn't going to go unless I hit the 100. So, you know, I did it and I did it because I'd set that clear intention and, it made a big difference. Okay. So that's something that I would definitely encourage you to do is, you know, make a decision. This is who I'm going to be. And there's a whole bunch of things that go with this. So by giving myself permission to make that 100 kilo snatch, you know, something that a lot of people, you know, would love to do, but will never do, giving myself permission to do that also gave me permission to, you know, to stand out in other areas, to do things in other areas that hadn't been done before. And that was probably a big part of, you know, having the guts to go after my own business at the end of that year, 2014, you know, leaving the Roosters after, you know, winning the regular season 2 years in a row, having a grand final winning, you know, debut season. That was a tough, you know, it was a decision that very few people would have made. Like, you don't walk away from a role like that when you're winning. You know, most people don't walk away from it regardless. But, you know, I decided to move on to another, you know, another opportunity because my belief was that I had other things to offer the world and that I needed to continue to challenge myself and that by staying in that same environment, I was likely to continue to be the same kind of person that I was. And I wanted to step into more, to be challenged to see if I did have more. And so, you know, that's what I did. And I love, you know, love rugby league. I love the time that I spent there, but I'm proud that I made the decision to move away when I knew that my heart and soul wasn't in putting my life into a rugby league team. So I've got a quote here: to believe in the things you can see and touch is no belief at all, but to believe in the unseen is a triumph and a blessing. It's Abraham Lincoln. I love that. To believe in the things you can see and touch is no belief at all, but to believe in the unseen is a triumph and a blessing. So you got to believe it first. This is where a lot of people will call bullshit and they'll want to go back to the papers and go back to the literature and blah, blah, blah. People who do the amazing things in history have always been told that's ridiculous. They've sometimes been imprisoned. They've sometimes been executed for having beliefs that were outside of the dominant thought of their time. They're, you know, many of them have later been vindicated, later been, you know, held up as great people in history, you know, like Galileo and Jesus. And, you know, there's so many people through history that have had huge opposition to their thoughts at the time. You know, Einstein was the same. You know, they've been ostracized and, you know, criticized heavily for standing apart from the majority. And yet, in the end, you know, they've actually been shown to have something really valuable that is held up in history as being an important time for history and an important belief and an important person. So if you're going to do something important, the chances are you're going to be heavily, heavily criticized for what you do. So don't, yeah, that's the, if you can believe, if you believe in something and you can see it, you can see that vision, then having other people not be able to see that vision and not believe in it with you and not, you know, not go with you, that is to be expected. That's always sort of been the way it is. If lots of people agree with you and expect it to work and see the truth in it, then it's probably not going to be that big a contribution to society and humanity. And it doesn't mean that you have to go and find a point of view that no one agrees with. You know, stand for what you stand for, but know that if a lot of people stand against it, that could be a good sign. You know, when you stand with the majority, it's time to analyze your position, I think is Mark Twain quote. So don't be scared if the belief that you have and the vision that you have for yourself isn't one that your parents agree with, isn't one that your mates agree with. It can be challenging for sure to live according to a different, you know, set of principles and different ideas. But if that's what's going to work for you, if that's the contribution that you would like to make to society, then go do it, you know. And the way I live, you know, most of the things I do most days are things that most people wouldn't do. And that's okay. You know, you got to do what you got to do. And your ability to stand apart from other people is going to be a massive determinant of whether you actually, you know, stand for anything, whether you have an impactful life, whether you can look back and be proud on what you've done. You know, you're probably going to have to stand apart. You're probably going to have to move away from the dominant thoughts, you know, some of the dominant thoughts around you. So, yeah, that's really what I want to talk about today, is just that, the power of belief, power of vision. Energize it, you know, write down what you want. You may not, you know, you can't completely control the time frame, you can't completely control how it's going to happen, but trust the process, know what you want, keep putting energy towards that, focus on what you want, and eventually it will come to you. And it may not come to you in the path and the way that you think it's going to come. So, you know, when you have bumps in the road, you have to trust the process. Trust that you've got to where you've got to now. And, you know, if there's a lot of things in your life that you're grateful for now, which, you know, there should be. I mean, everybody has a lot to be grateful for if you really get down to it. If you can be grateful for many of the things that you have right now, then why would you not have faith that the future will hold amazing things for you as well? So go after it in the physical. Do the impossible, do things that you thought you'd never be able to do, and give yourself permission, draw some courage from that to go after more in other realms, okay? When you have that basis of, physically living what you couldn't live before, what you didn't think you were able to do before, what you thought was impossible, when you're physically living that, then you really don't have the same basis to doubt what's possible in other areas of your life. So, you know, this goes across all areas, relationships, business, you know, what income you can have, where you can live, what lifestyle you can have. Like, don't accept working 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 in something that you don't want to do. You know, just do your best at that for now, but establish a vision of how you actually want to live. You know, how would you ideally spend your time? And, you know, it's difficult to do. It's difficult to consider life outside the borders and the boxes that we're mostly faced with. But, you know, what contribution would you like to make? Initially, a lot of people, when you sort of start to ask these questions, they're like, yeah, I'd like to be, you know, nude on a beach in Barbados and, you know, drinking cocktails and, you know, that's how I want to live. But pretty sure after a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 2 years, 5 years, at some stage, you're going to want to put some clothes on and get something done. Or maybe not put some clothes on, but you definitely going to want to get something done. You definitely going to want to sober up. And, you know, the escapism that people, you know, go to in their 1 or 2 weeks a year when they get free time of, you know, let's get somewhere way away from where we live and, you know, get onto the drugs or on alcohol or whatever. Like, that's just symptoms that your life at home sucks. That's not actually what you really want to be doing. That's just getting away from what you normally do. Okay. So if you said, well, actually I have control, like the rest of this lifetime and whatever lifetimes follow are actually my responsibility, and I will invest that time in the things that I want to invest it in, what would you do? Okay. And you might say, well, no, I can't just do that. I've got responsibility. I've got kids. I've got bills. I've got a mortgage. For sure. But could you claim 10 minutes? Could you claim an hour a day to invest in something that's going to move you towards how you actually want to be living? Okay. So contribution needs to be at the center. The rewards are always going to be in proportion to the contribution that we make. So if this podcast makes a big contribution to a few people's lives, and I think if you listen to, you know, 30 episodes of this podcast, I think you will live life in a different and better way from that perspective, from that point forward. I have a lot of belief that these methods, these ways of thinking, these philosophies that I've come to live by in recent years are better than what I grew up, you know, how I grew up living, what I was doing at that time. And better than what I see walking around at the shopping center. You know, when I see the way most people are living and thinking and what their bodies function like, you know, I feel that they've missed the point, that the philosophy that they've, you know, the beliefs that they've instilled in themselves or they've had instilled in them are not good ones. You know, they're not optimal, at least. Like they're holding people back from their potential. And most of the time, if you actually, you know, when I have a talk with someone, whether a personal trainer or, you know, footy player or anyone off the street, they'll generally go, oh yeah, that's a different way to look at things. And oh yeah, maybe I should try this and maybe I should try that. So what contribution would you really like to make? Like, say you didn't have to make any money for the rest of your life, but you had to make a contribution. What would you spend your time on? And that's the direction that you should be going in. You know, maybe you've only got 5 minutes a week to spare. Maybe you're the busiest person in the world, busier than, you know, Donald Trump and Elon Musk and you know, Tim Ferriss and all these guys put together. You know, you've got less time than anybody, but still put some time aside to put into exactly what you would love to do, the contribution that you would love to make. And then build on that, you know, continue to put more time into what you love. And don't just people go, okay, yeah, like I listen to lots of podcasts or, you know, and this is a great example right now, but, you know, like, I watch a lot of movies, I listen to, you know, read a lot of books and, you know, I'm learning all the time about this stuff. Cool. Like, learning is good. Now go and act on it. Now go and share it. You're never going to be ready. You're never going to have everything lined up to go, yeah, right now I am the world leader in this. So I have the right to go and speak. You don't get to become a dominant figure. You don't get to become a leader. You don't get to become without putting yourself out there. So yes, do the work, do the reading. Most importantly, you know, instill the habits and the actions. And then that will give you the, you know, gradually you become the leader. You become the person that you want to be, you know, through the actions. So you have to start now. You know, don't wait until you've read everything or you've lifted everything or whatever. Start from where you are and put your habits, you know, in line with where you want to go, right? So you might think, well, I'm not going to start telling people about powerlifting until I've at least lifted X, Y, Z. But there's actually a lot of power in just saying, well, this is where I'm at right now and this is where I'm going, and documenting the journey from there. Okay. And that will actually probably improve the quality of your journey. And maybe your audience won't grow until you actually get to, you know, some improvements, but that will also be good feedback for you of like, oh, okay, this is what helps this to grow. This is what people respond to. You know, people are drawing energy off me just getting from being quite a good average lifter to being, you know, an excellent lifter. I haven't broken any world records or anything yet, but people are drawing motivation and energy off what I'm doing. I was listening to Mark Smelly Bell, Mark Bell. powerlifter who trained out of Westside Barbell for a while, he kind of realized that he wasn't going to be that world record breaking athlete like a lot of the guys there at Westside Barbell. He wasn't quite crazy enough, and he didn't buy into it quite as deeply to be that world record breaking athlete. But he also realized that he could potentially have even more impact as a person, as a public figure, as a speaker, as an educator. He has a free gym, and you know, by doing what he does, you know, he probably influences. But he influences a lot of people. He may influence more people than Louis Simmons because he's constantly creating content. He has a podcast. His stuff is, you know, clearer. Louis has had a massive influence though, and he's definitely, you know, part of that influence. So, you know, Dave Tate and Jim Wendler and, you know, a lot of these guys have actually come out from time at Westside Barbell. So my point here is that we need to get shit done, and if we can have more of our actions going towards what we most believe in, then the world's going to be a better place. So you do have time. There is some time. There is some possibility. You know, where would you love to leave an impact? You know, what action could you take that would, you know, you would draw inspiration from, that people around you would draw inspiration from? And soon enough, you know, asking these questions consistently to people over the last few years, there's so many people who've transitioned careers and gone from impossible positions. You know, probably I would say a quarter, maybe a fifth of the people who now have training facilities that have been through Real Movement Education, you know, they were working in other professions and they didn't even have personal training qualifications, but they put some faith in me and they put some faith in themselves and they put some faith in our community. They believed, and now they run their own facilities, and you know, they have their family and their lifestyle built around helping people to improve their health and performance. And you know, that was what they wanted to do, and that's gold. And you know, maybe 3 years from now, 5 years from now, they'll be like, yeah, I think I'm spending a little bit too much time in the gym. I would like to be spending more time doing X, Y, Z, and they'll move to that. You know, they'll put a manager in, or they'll close the gym, or whatever they want to do. But if that's the vision, then by fully committing to it and taking action towards it, it's amazing what can get done. And you know, we see that over and over again. So at the heart of things, the power of your vision. Your vision is going to determine your future. Okay, so you want your habits to be determined by your future, not by your past. So what are your habits? What are you doing every day? What are you spending your time on? Everybody has obsession. Where you're spending your time, that's where what you're obsessed with. Okay, so most people, our obsessions are social media, YouTube, Netflix. Our obsessions are whatever they are, you know, maybe going to the gym. Our obsessions are doing work that we don't love, because the majority of society is spending a lot of time doing jobs that aren't really helping anyone too much and that they don't love doing. So society, humanity right now has an obsession with doing meaningless, mostly useless work. You know, that's what we have an obsession with right now. The way that changes is by putting our time into other things. Okay, so it's useful for me. You know, I don't particularly, it's funny, you might, you know, think I'm stupid saying this, but I don't particularly enjoy juggling. It is kind of a chore. There is a satisfaction in progressing with it in the same way there's a satisfaction in progressing in just about anything. But continuing to improve five ball juggling is very challenging. It doesn't really want to improve too much now. It has a very slow rate of improvement. And, you know, to be able to do more than what I can do now, I don't know, you know, it's you get diminishing returns, right? You keep doing your best at the same thing over and over again. The gains become very slow. Initially with three ball juggling, it's people find it, you know, highly rewarding and quite fun because day to day you're improving. But now it's a question of doing consistent work for the whole month or for the whole quarter. And if you do the work every day for the quarter, then you're better at the end of the quarter than the start. But most days, you can't really see any improvement from the previous day. And that's, you know, same kind of thing where you get to with your strength, with your body composition. So it becomes a lot harder to be good. But the reason why I stick with it, despite it being not that joyful, is because it's a symbol for me. It's a symbol for me of, do I do work? And if I'm a person who doesn't do work, then, you know, what am I going to get done in this life? Like, it's something that makes life livable for me, because I know that I can trust myself to go back to something consistently. And that trust, having that trust in yourself is a rare thing and a powerful thing. Okay. So thoughts for today. To believe in things you can see and touch is no belief at all, but to believe in the unseen is a blessing and a triumph. Another one that I really love. Do not go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. That's Ralph Waldo Emerson. Have the guts to go after it. See what happens. Everyone has that inkling, that urge. There's a voice inside that says, move towards this and let's see what happens. Do some Wim Hof breathing. Find some meditation. Go and walk in nature for a few hours. And you'll find that there's a new thought, and that's an opportunity that your subconscious has, without so much noise going on, your subconscious will step in and go, hey, this is really what you should be doing. And, you know, listen to that, move towards it. You don't have to completely uproot your life. Maybe you do want to completely uproot your life. Maybe just go sell everything and just get on the road. You know, maybe that's what you need to do. If you feel like that's what you need to do, then maybe you should go do it. But if you can't do that, then just take a few steps, just organize something, make a shift. And by making that one shift, by making that one step, you might see the second step, you might see the third step, you might see the fourth step. You're not as trapped as you think you are, because you can take one step. If you can take one step, then you can take 1,000. Okay, so this is a message to me as much as it's a message to you. This podcast in itself is a leap in this direction, and I really appreciate your support. We've been getting a lot of comments, and we've had a couple of reviews there, and I really appreciate all of those things. And I really want to make a positive contribution to humanity, and this is one of the possibilities that is there to do it. So I'm really looking forward to going live with Mitch Pike in 13 minutes. This won't be up by that stage, but if you get on my Insta story today, you will see our live chat. Mitch Pike is a super interesting guy. He's done a lot of powerful things. He's world record holder, if not world record level 30-second assault bike. Super, super high power output guy. 180-kilo bench, 310-kilo deadlift. Jump on that. His powerful mind as much as a powerful body. Jump on my Insta story and check out that. Give us some comments. Give us some thoughts. Any questions for the next one as well. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon. Have an amazing day. Keegan Smith for the Keegan Smith Experience. Man, that guy can talk. But he does it because he loves it. If you loved it, share it. Give us some feedback. What was great? What didn't you like? What was your biggest take-home message? Make sure you stay in touch with us on Instagram and share your wins, people. This win is only going to come if we do it together. We have to take ourselves further. By taking ourselves further, we give permission for everybody around us to make positive changes in their lives and to become the people who they want to become. Everybody's changing the world. You are changing the world. Let's do this together. Let's see how far we can take it. Imagine if we all put our full heart into becoming the best versions of ourselves every single day.